Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 54 of the Beacon Serenity podcast. I am one of your hosts, Emelson, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, Anomaly.
Hello.
And this week, we have a very special episode. We are going to be talking through the lore of each of the four covenants, as explained to us by Anom. Now, so the way this is that we sat down and pre-recorded some audio on Tuesday. Then, after recording, watched, you know, lore videos from Noble, Wowhead's got some lore posts up, you know, actually read and watched and listened to what really happened. And we're going to go back. We're going to listen to some of that audio today and see how close Anom got. Since Anom actually hadn't done the Night Fae, we might have a special guest lore with Emelson segment at the end if we have time to talk about the Night Fae.
Oh, nice.
But before we get into that, we had a lot of stuff happen this week.
We did, yeah. So we had a couple of things happen this week. So I think one of the first things was we had Preach put out a video. We can link it. Just going over some of the Raider.io data around covenants and their uses in Mythic Plus, and some of the more, I guess, interesting things you see there. Emelson, I didn't get a chance to watch the full thing, but what I'm assuming it's just there are certain covenants that are just, you know, fully overrepresented than other ones.
Hang on one second. I'm screwing around with Discord real quick. If I can get it to. Never mind. I guess I'm not screwing around with Discord.
Got it.
So basically, there's two things that he looks at in the video. One is, what does a covenant breakdown look like for each spec? For, well, you know, he's not going through all 36, but for the ones he does look at, are people picking their BIS, like the one the guide says, or are they picking the one that they like the most?
Right.
And it's, you can't really say, you know, oh, 90% of druids are Night Fae, therefore they all pick the one from the guide said, because there's other factors as well, because, you know, Night Fae is the druid covenant in more ways than one.
Right.
But it does show up more clearly in other classes. Like if you look at DPS warriors, they are overwhelmingly Venthyr because of how good Condemn is, even though, I mean, I would argue Kyrian is the most fitting warrior covenant. But an argument could be made, I think, especially for Maldraxxus as well. And there's just very few of the, like, Prout warriors are Kyrian. But DPS warriors, not really.
Yeah.
So overwhelmingly, week one, even, people were picking the best covenant for their spec. They were not picking according to lore or cosmetics or these other things that Blizzard hoped would tempt people away from the best covenant.
Right, right.
But then he also looked at things like rerolls. Are people swapping from the one they initially picked to the meta one? And the answer is yes. Like, yeah. The skew in these charts gets more severe over time. Warrior, you know, the Venthyr population goes up. If you look at something like Brewmaster, which I don't think he pulled up a Brewmaster chart on there, but I know exactly what it would look like based on the just the ladder from Raider.io for tanks, and right. It would be more people starting as like split between the three, and then centralizing on Kyrian in Mythic Plus because it's the clear choice in Mythic Plus, and that's. No surprise?
No.
I mean, but it is interesting to see it actually carried out in the data.
Yeah.
Which, pet peeve, their pyramid charts are really hard to look at. Like, yeah. They're pretty, but oh boy, they're not effective.
Well, I was, that's actually what I skipped ahead in the video real quick right before this, just to watch a little bit of it. And that's the first thing I landed on. I was like, the top's pointier. And it's like the percentages that don't, it just didn't line up in my mind. Right. Because I was like,
correct. Because it's a volumetric chart that they treated
like a bar chart.
They might have actually done it volumetrically. I don't know. It doesn't look like they did. But
no, and that's where my mind went when I was like looking at like the bottom ones having small percentages, but I'm like, but it's spread out across the whole base. It's like it's 3D-ish, so I can tell a little bit. Yeah.
Right. So yeah. The video is great, highly recommend, but oh boy. Those charts, like, just use a bar chart.
Yeah.
Just use a bar chart.
Yeah.
Simple and effective.
That's funny. Yeah. But no, see, it was a solid video. And I think what people, I mean, probably expected for the most part, right, is sort of just like the consolidation of folks picking the, seeing a group of individuals do well with the covenant and then sort of more people piling onto that same covenant, right?
Yeah. There are things as well, like there were a couple other things, like the Mythic Plus like participation dropping actually pretty rapidly as people realized how bad the gearing was.
Oh yeah, I didn't see that part. Yeah, but that would make sense.
And also comparing Covenant data from Raider.io to another site that has the overall WoW population or like a sample of it. Mm-hmm. To see if it looks significantly different if you only look at the people that do Mythic Plus. And the answer is no. And part of that is because Mythic Plus is a huge category, right?
Right.
Like, it includes everything all the way down from plus twos all the way up to plus 20s. There's a huge breadth of people to play. And it's basically just saying, did you hit level 60 and do any content at max level?
Right, right. Yeah. Makes sense. That makes sense. So interesting. Cool. That's a cool topic for something I bet people were not surprised to see, I guess.
Yeah. I imagine very few people are surprised by that result.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. All right. So I think next up, we kind of started to talk about this a little bit in the pre-show, which triggered us to start the podcast, which was they put out a upcoming class changes tuning post. So a bunch of changes. I think it's up to 10 different classes get some sort of flat damage increase on Tuesday. So I mean, I don't know if we need to read every one of the classes, but
I don't think it's necessary. I think it is worth noting that like the largest one is 5%.
Right. Yeah.
And if you look at something like Arms Warrior got a 3% buff. I think Fury got a 3% buff too, but they got a 3% buff. If you actually look at where they are in Warcraft logs, like you look at the performance, you take that that box plot and you shift where they are over by 3%, it doesn't change anything.
Right.
They're still in the dumpster.
Yeah.
Like it's same with Havoc. It's just like there comes a point where making changes that are ineffective is worse than making no changes at all. And I think they've reached that point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like they're just sort of flat damage increases, right? There's nothing to individual abilities. It's more like just aura buffs, right, in general. And yeah, I mean, it's, you're right. Like the warrior one's funny. The demon hunter one is funny. I mean, the demon one is funny, particularly for me, is because we are going to have our demon hunter, who is a DPS, switched to be a tank, and our brewmaster,
Windwalker,
just because even if, I think we looked at the logs, even if he's a 60 percentile Windwalker,
he's going to do
still
more
better damage than 100 percentile DH.
Also, the like Vengeance Demon Hunter is a better tank right now than Brewmaster.
So, I mean,
it's a win-win.
It's a win-win, but it's just funny that like we see these buffs and it doesn't even change. Yeah, you're right. It doesn't change anything. And I think I talked a little bit about this, is it has some potentially not great effects in terms of like these also carry over into PvP, where some of these, you know, classes, particularly warriors, are extremely strong right now and just get stronger. And it's a flat nerf. So like Beastmasters with their AoE damage just become better AoEing, right?
and that applies to some extent to like Fury Warriors that can do their free cleave by whirlwinding and then rampaging on AoE.
Right.
But yeah. I don't even know that they were particularly stellar in AoE in the first place. So they're a bad example. BM is a better example.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean that's we'll see what that turns into in terms of like how the classes play, but I mean it's really uninspired, I would say, changes.
It's really strange to me as well. Not so much the changes they made, but this is the first time since Cataclysm that I've actually cared about both halves of the patch notes, like the PvP impact and the PvE impact. Because right. On the one hand, I'm like, hooray, our warrior is going to be 3% better. At the same time, I'm like, oh, fuck. That warrior is going to burst me 3% harder in arenas.
Exactly.
It's, yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what next week brings. But as always, no tank changes, no healer changes.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Which, so. I would say that the tank situation is even worse than the DPS situation. And the DPS situation is pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see. Maybe this is just sort of the first pass and we'll start seeing some potential individual, like this is their, like, we're going to chop an arm off phase. And then next phase, like we're going and start to maybe use a scalpel, you know, get in there and really.
I don't even know that this is chopping arm off phase. Like, seems unlikely that this is the chopping arm off phase with the biggest being a 5% change.
That's true. That's fair. That's fair. We're taking fingernails now. We'll get to the arms eventually.
You take enough fingernails, you get to the arm.
That's true. That's true. So yeah, so class tuning, just general passes for Tuesday. That goes live this Tuesday coming up. So then next up is we had a bunch of raid nerfs announced probably after the podcast. So most of these are
after the podcast last week.
Yeah. So most of these went live on Tuesday. Nothing new unless you haven't raided yet. But some changes both to Castle Nathria and to a couple of the dungeons. So for Nathria, these ones are interesting. So Council of Blood got a couple of nerfs to both Drain Essence and the Volley. Basically everything but mythic. Sort of reducing the damage for smaller group sizes in those flex content groups. And then Sludge Fist actually got a bunch of damage reductions to the Roar, the Chain Slam, and the Chain Bleed. The Chain Slam and Chain Bleed got a 35% damage reduction, which is actually pretty big.
That's a lot.
So we actually started pulling Sludge Fist on Thursday, and it essentially means you don't generally need the healer cooldown every chain slam, which is nice. Like Spirit Shell is generally enough to keep those folks healthy.
I mean, Spirit Shell is disgusting. That's we don't need a healer cooldown. We just use SLT.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But no, the damage is definitely that you can feel it on Sludge Fist. And then the big one though. At least on Mythic Sultry. So the big one that was Stone
Legion Generals.
Completely reworked. Literally from the ground
that's
up.
Too strong of a statement, but it's got really big changes.
I mean, it's essentially a different fight. So if you killed Stone Legion Generals like previous week on Mythic and you pull it today, it is technically it's a different fight. I mean, it's a ton of changes across the board. Like some of the adds got their health reduced, some increase in cooldowns on certain abilities from the adds. There was also an interesting damage reduction but range increase on certain abilities, or really across the board on the abilities here,
right? This thing going on where the range on the tank mechanics was 10 yards and if you were out of range at the end of the cast, it just wouldn't hit you. And it would go on cooldown. So, I'm going to be honest, I had not gotten to the point of doing my Stone Legion prep yet. We are almost done with Council, so we're still a little bit off of starting Stone Legion. But my understanding is that during like the main phases, tanks were just tank swapping because you care about positioning. But then in the rest of the phases, you just had a tank out in no man's land tanking one of the bosses. Because, for example, Heartrend which is the dot that gets applied to random players, had a range. So you would tank the boss way out in Never Never Land. It would never apply during the intermission. And then the tank would do their best to just jump out of every single tank mechanic and never actually get hit during the intermission. So this set of changes is both nerfs and buffs, because this is 100% a buff to the fight. Like, they reduce the damage on them by 20%, but it's during the intermission basically increasing the damage you took from them by 80%, because before you were taking zero.
They did that. And even with Heartrend, they removed the mythic only mechanic, which was if you dispelled Heartrend as the dispeller, you also got the dot that was left. So like both the healer and the whoever had it would get it.
The part of the reason for that is that the way groups were doing it is you would have a priest mass dispel them inside of an Ankh totem and die, and then take the Ankh totem. And that's how you dealt with a lot of them. And that's like the mechanic was overtuned as all hell. It needed to go. So
And then, I mean, the other big thing was that any phase change now resets the spell cooldowns. So you don't end up with the awkward, like, waiting to DPS so you get good spell lineups, right? Like, that happens in a lot of fights. I mean, the biggest one from, at least that I can remember, was the EP boss right before Queen Azara.
Is it cool
where, like, you literally pushed it at, like, what was it, like 230, but you only get the boss to like 70% health, like in the first 2.5 minutes. So it's like you basically got the boss to like 70.6 and then did nothing for a minute and a half and then pushed it, or whatever the percentage pushover was.
I mean, we had people just running around on their mounts for the first minute and a half of the fight.
Awful. I put something on follow,
it's definitely the most egregious one this tier, some Legion Generals. And this, like, phase changes, reset timers basically fixes that. You can still get into some little spell queuing jankiness within a phase, but because during the intermission everything gets queued up all at once and then it can go off in a random order, before it would just completely screw things up depending on when you pushed. Council of Blood also has a little bit of that going on, where, like,
it does,
you got to push at specific times so that you have the ad cast. Like, in phase three, it's really important that you get the second ad cast before the dance phase instead of after, because if you do it before, you can damage it during the dance phase and kill it. If you get it after, then you can't. So, like, there's a few things like that, but it's not anywhere near as extreme as some Legion Generals. So I think, as a whole, most people's reaction to these nerfs was good. Like, I don't think anybody likes Stone Legion Generals. And at the same time, like, I think it is probably going to get... I would not be surprised to next week, like, see more changes to Stone Legion Generals specifically targeted at the tank mechanics.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's necessary, but I would not be surprised to see it. And when I say, let me, like, hedge that. I don't know if it's necessary, because I have never pulled the boss on Mythic. Therefore, I have no clue.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see for sure. Hopefully, hopefully we're there next week. Sledge doesn't take us too many pulls. And you get Council down, of course. This week.
Yeah, Council's close. We're close.
Nice. I guess outside of raids, those are the big, I think, raid nerfs. They did do a pass on a bunch of different dungeons. Most notably was the Necrotic Wake. Necrotic Wake essentially health reductions on pretty much every mob in there, along with damage reductions for the majority of them.
Huge.
So, like, the biggest one that I noticed was the mages. So the Brittlebone mages, which are like the skeletons that are in the different clumps. I think you only fight one of them, but they essentially both reduce the damage on their frostbolt volley and also increase the cast time. So sort of just a general damage reduction and health reduction across the board from pretty much everything. Yeah. So
all the Brittlebone ones are summoned by the Necromancers, so you have to fight a bunch of them at the same time. And also that means that, like, you don't really have a choice over whether to pull multiple casters or, like, CC them or whatever. You just get them.
Right.
Yeah. And so that meant things like the Frostbolt from the Brittlebone Mage. If you did not have a melee heavy comp, you couldn't interrupt all of them. And so they literally cut the damage by a third on that. It's kind of crazy. They also made them, and this is, I think, probably the most important change for Pugs. They made the Kyrian weapons that they're out throughout the dungeon, the Javelin, the Shield, the Anima Orb, and the Forge Hammer. They stay with you now when you die.
Oh, cool, cool.
So no longer will you like have three weapons on your group in preparation for something, die, and lose all of them, and basically not be able to do the key anymore.
Yeah. That is a good one. I didn't actually catch that one, but that'll definitely be helpful.
They also nerfed them so they like split damage after 8 targets, which basically kills the MDI strat.
Right, yeah.
But that's okay. For Pugs, it's way more important that you don't lose them when you die.
Yeah. Yeah. That is faux show. But yeah, Necrotic Wake, probably easier this week, or actually definitely easier this week based on everything.
Definitely easier this week.
And then a couple more specific changes. The other big one was the Manifestation of Pride now sees through stealth and invisibility effects, which, again, I think ruins the MDI strat of, you know, Shadow
Melding. Also introduced some bugs, if you've been paying attention to social media. The Prideful, for a lot of people, was just never becoming targetable, but it would keep you in combat.
Oh, nice. I did not see that.
So you would have, you know, your third Pride or whatever, just, like, not become attackable, keep you in combat, and
that sucks.
Kind of sucks.
That sucks. I didn't hear about that, but yeah, the stealth change is interesting. Kind of kills the old Night Face strat, or sorry, Night Elf strat for MDI.
So apparently, you can still do that, which is hilarious to me, because the Night Elf ability is both a combat drop and invisibility. And the important thing is the combat drop. If you're far enough away that the invisibility doesn't matter, then the combat drop still works.
Gotcha.
I don't know if that actually changes things, because we've seen stuff like snapping be very uncommon due to just like little bits of extra friction added to it, like the time it takes for mobs to teleport you plus the evade time. So like by doing this, it might make it so it's no longer efficient enough to actually do in practice, or some dungeons it may just straight up not be possible due to spacing constraints. But it's not 100% dead.
Okay. Fair enough. But yeah, I think that's it for sort of the raid and dungeon nerfs/changes this week.
And there's a couple other bosses that got hit, but nothing nearly as big as the Necrotic Wave.
Yeah, that's for sure. And the final thing in what happened last week, apparently the absorb bug is becoming more well known. So I'd only heard about this in passing. I think Emilson, you might have a little bit more information on this one.
Way back in when it Shadowlands released in November, November, we had someone come into Brew Questions asking why their Celestial Brew wasn't working. And like, that's a really hard question to answer. Like, I don't know, dude, why doesn't it work? And they gave us a video of them pressing Celestial Brew and then taking damage while the absorb is up, like going straight to their health.
Oh, interesting.
And then they die. Interesting note, though, they had another buff, Bulwark of the Masses. Do you remember that? It's an Azerite trait.
Vaguely. Okay.
So, even though he was no longer wearing Azerite armor or a Heart of Azeroth, in Shadowlands content, where it's supposed to be turned off.
Interesting.
He was still getting the Bulwark of the Masses trigger. And I don't know if this is the ultimate cause of the bug or not, but the Bulwark of the Masses buff shows as having zero absorb left. So it's buff, it's on there, it absorbs zero damage. And normally, when an absorb absorbs zero damage, it gets removed.
Right.
But in this case, I don't know, it was breaking everything. And absorbs just no longer functioned for him. while it was up, which basically meant he couldn't do any Mythic Plus because Bork of the Masses would proc every single pull, and he just like couldn't use any absorb. Yeah. Like this priest absorbs life cocoon, nothing worked.
That's crazy.
And this actually extends, it turns out, it's not just a Brewmaster thing.
Mm-hmm.
It also applies to Demon Hunters, because they had a trait in BFA that gave them a small absorb when they consumed a soul. Now, you might, if you've played the Demon Hunter, know that you consume souls a lot. It's part of your rotation.
Right.
So, this, I've got a link to Reddit from this week, where someone... basically, 80% of a fight, they were just immune to absorb shields.
Jesus.
So, like, that's huge. You can't get, there's no, like, Power Word Shield doesn't do a lot, but it still matters. Spirit Shell obviously does nothing. Life Cocoon can't save you anymore. All the random incidental absorbs that get thrown out don't work. Any absorb trinkets don't work. Nothing works.
Crazy.
Do
they know why they're still getting these buffs? Or just...
No idea. We reported this last November.
Yeah. That's crazy.
And we've had more incidents of it in brew questions. We keep telling them, you know, make sure you're not wearing Azerite. Make sure you have your Heart of Azeroth off. You can work around it by putting Cancellara macros on your important absorbs. Won't help you if it happens while someone else casts an absorb on you. But if it's really important, you can macro, you know, Cancellara, Bulwark of the Masses into all of your abilities. But if it does actually happen to you, you should put in a ticket to support and see if they can help you. Nobody's ever come back to brew questions after doing this, so I have no idea if they actually got help or not. But I would hope they can unfuck your character.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And I actually had one more thing I wanted to talk about before we move on to lore that we just found out about yesterday, basically. So Brewmasters have this conduit. Celestial Effervescence, I want to say it is. Let me pull that up real quick. It's Celestial Effervescence. That while Celestial Brew is active, your self-healing is increased by X percent. And I've already talked in the past about why this is really bad. Celestial Brew doesn't last that long. It's like, win more, you already have Celestial Brew up, why do you need more healing? Well, maybe you need more healing if your absorb doesn't work, but aside from that, why do you need more healing? Well, it turns out it also doesn't work with most of our healing.
Wait, what?
It does not... hang on, let me make a list of all the things it does not work on. Celestial Fortune.
Okay.
Gift of the Ox.
Okay.
Those two by themselves are like 70% of our healing. It doesn't help from Celestial Brew itself.
That's a huge amount.
Healing Elixir.
Okay.
So we're left with the only self-healing we have. Vivify and the base heal from Expel Harm, which is a pittance.
Yeah, it's nothing.
So basically the trait just doesn't... The conduit just doesn't do anything. It is actually like having an empty slot.
That's absolutely crazy.
So, I'm going to have to go and update the guide, because the guide actually calls out that, like, Celestial Fortune and Gift of the Ox should work with it, and they don't. Which means it's even worse than we thought.
So they don't ever equip this ever.
Yeah, which gives us, both of the Brewmaster-specific Endurance Conduits are don't ever equip this tier. So that means that, like, I'm going to be putting in my two endurance conduits for Nia when I go back Night Fae are going to be Harm Denial, because while the actual defensive part is worthless,
right,
it does add like 3 or 4 DPS, so at least it does something.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe the one that gives you free Vivify casts when you cast it on yourself zero value in raids. I might occasionally use it in Mythic Plus, but mostly for Torghast, just so I don't have to swap that one out.
That would work.
It's super dumb. Like, our conduits are so bad.
Oh, man.
But yeah, I just wanted to bring that up, specifically because it basically means the Brewmasters don't have Endurance conduits, which is kind of feels bad.
That's funny.
All right, though. Is it time for the lore with Anam?
I think we are ready for lore by Anam. So I think you explained this really at the top of the show, but basically we recorded earlier this week, me going through three of the four Covenant campaigns, basically three of the four that I knew or I played through, and basically explaining what happened. And then after that, what happened since, so we did that Wednesday night. So since Wednesday, I have been consuming basically a bunch of the novel videos and some other lore things to understand how right or wrong I was. And then, I mean, I think the goal here is basically to state which story is better. Maybe we could say I don't know what the goal is. I think the goal is just to see, number one, how bad I am at remembering lore. And number two, I think all of us just learned something, right? So.
Yep.
Then we did, so I said three out of the four. Our fourth Covenant, Night Fae, since I didn't do it, Emelson stepped in to, you know, provide just a beautiful rendition of the Ardenweald Covenant campaign, which is basically perfect. I read that one. I didn't get to watch it, but I read that one. Okay. So
I watched that one. I did miss some things, so you're not the only one.
Good. Well, I mean, nobody's perfect, Emelson.
Except
maybe me when it comes to Kyrian lore, because I nailed that one, I think.
Did you, though?
I don't know. Maybe we're going to have to watch it and see. Or listen to it and see. Not watch it, but listen to it and see.
All right. So I have this chopped up a little bit. We're going to start with the Kyrian stuff. And I'm planning to interrupt the pre-recording, because for one thing, it's like 7 minutes long for Kyrian, and I don't want to sit here and listen for 7 minutes without doing anything. But also, give us a little bit of time to comment on specific things that you got right or wrong without waiting until the end.
Oh, I like that. Okay.
Without further ado, this is Anam's rendition of the Kyrian Covenant campaign.
Okay. So the Kyrian Covenant campaign by Anam. So what ends up happening with the Kyrian is that this sort of is an extension of the story of the Zone, where you unleash the Shaw-like people. They're like the Dark Knights, or like, if you remember playing, there was like a Zelda game where you had to fight like Dark Link. So it's like that type of people. You unleash one of those guys called Lithendra, I believe, or something, Lith something. And basically...
Lithonia,
thank you, yes, Lithonia. And that person, I don't know if it's a he or she, but Lithonia, at the start of the campaign, essentially attacks like your Covenant campaign home and explodes or blows up the altar where you essentially get your wings. So it's sort of like the place where, I don't know, the Kyrian people go and they're like, oh, you're cool and you get wings. You become ascended, I think, or something like that. So they blow that up. And then so for the Kyrian, so the goal after that is basically you need to rebuild this sort of like wing giving place. But not like a, it's not like a Buffalo Wild Wings. It's like wings for your back, like real ones.
So you got that part right, I think. Right?
I did. It was not a Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yes, it was not Buffalo Wild Wings.
But they did destroy the place where they ascend. But I missed actually a big part, I feel like, before this, which I don't know if we want to go into real quick, but it's the whole like Ben Howell section, like where you go into somebody's memory and like you sort of like follow their memory about like this is how a soul enters the Maw and everything like that, and you're going with Clea because to become ascended, their duty is always to help the souls move from the or move the souls safely into Ouroboros, where they can then go to one of the four houses, right? Or one of the four covenants. So like you accompany Clea on this final trial, and then that's when you like save Ben Hal, which is essentially one of the farmers in Redridge. And he gets killed basically during the Scourge attack that happens at the opening of Shadowlands.
Got you.
And that's when Clea finds out that all the souls are not going to the houses, but going to the mall directly.
I remember that now that you mentioned it.
Yeah.
That quest chain was really annoying.
It was, yeah. And so then at the end of that, you like Clea is now super pissed. You head back to the Kyrian head place. What's it? The spot? It's not Spires of Ascension, but the
Path of Ascension.
It's whatever the Covenant area is called. Yeah. But you go back there just as like this Devos person who is in and out real quick. But Devos attacks, destroys the big thing. And then you go and kill him, and then you have to rebuild it. That's where, like, that's kind of where I'm at. So I skipped over this whole, like, the reason, the Clea part, going back to, like basically helping a soul pull, you know, helping a soul cross over.
I also realized that you can't actually, you're, I assume, are listening to this stream.
Yes.
To hear this.
Yeah.
How is the audio level?
It's fine. It's good.
Okay. Let's continue.
All right. From that, you have to so like it breaks apart and it's all like messed up. The funny thing, I don't know if you were carrying at the time, but like the geometry didn't work. So like while it was crumbled on one side, you could still stand and float because they just made it like a box. They didn't like actually like mold the walkable area to like the crumbly part. It was stupid. Anyway, so you have to go around. So after that happens, you basically spend the next 3 weeks essentially rebuilding this altar. And to do that, you essentially need to ask for like tributes from the other zone places. So you go to like the Venthyr place and you get a tribute from them, which I think is like, honestly, I don't remember what the Venthyr one is. Let's just say they gave you an anima canister and that was important, but they give you something and you take it back.
What did they actually give?
I think
that's the most obvious thing to inquire about, but
they gave you, I think it was a they gave you a crest, like a crest of Venthyr land or whatever that you helped it. You had to help them empower that crest, and they gave you the crest. So that was like the one artifact from the Venthyr, was like this crest, and you helped the Countess, which is the same, I think, person.
The only thing that shows up in the
Venthyr campaign, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's an interesting one too, because that's also the one where you find out about Uther and Locina, which I guess we'll get to in a second, but that the Venthyr one's the first time you start to hear Uther's name.
Okay.
From the Necrolords, you get some heart thing, which I think is from like a bad demon. Like you help them kill a bad demon or something. That's attacking them in one of the houses, I think. And you get their heart. So that's like another little trinket you take back and you like put it in. Like, it almost looks like, if you ever played Metroid, it looks like a Metroid, because it's like a little like floaty bubble that sort of just sits there. So you put it in that.
So yeah, that's basically the
yeah, I nailed that one.
Yeah, you nailed that.
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt that the heart is the most, like, evidently visible after you finish the campaign, because you still have the altar there. The heart is very clearly visible.
Oh, yeah, 100%. It's, like, the first thing, yeah. And then the final one is the Night Fae. And essentially for the Night Fae, you, like, kill somebody. You kill, like, one of the little, like, butterfly people. Well, you don't kill them. Like, they, like, willingly die so that you can live or something. It's something about like their Night Fae people who are like, you like go in the earth and you become the plants or something, I think is the way that they presented it. So you do that. So then you get, that's the final piece. And then you have a week of basically like charging up. And when you charge it up, it magically like rebuilds. Like there's no actual building that goes on. It just like rebuilds the structure in the middle.
The Ardenweald one, a little light on the detail, but you got the gist of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way that I think it worked was you needed like a specific thing from Ardenweald, and to get that thing, there's like a ritual, and as a part of the ritual, like Willow Blossom, who is actually the person that, you know, sacrifices themselves, has to do a bunch of things, and like it's a little bit more heartfelt than I made out it seems. When I rewatched, I was like, man, I should have probably paid attention to it, because like you essentially, it's like you save her best friend, you save Willow Blossom's best friend Grubby, and then you take her on her bucket list essentially of things she wants to do around Ardenweald. And then at the end of it is when she's like, all right, I'm ready to complete the ritual, which is when she like gives her life force to empower the vessel, which then in turn empowers the Crest of Ascension, which is the winged altar in a Kyrian place. So
yeah,
but yeah, I did okay with that one.
Yeah,
and to be fair, the only reason I knew about that one was not because I watched it, was because people after it happened were like, oh, it was so sad. I'm like, what do you mean, what happened?
And then I was we like, had that exact conversation.
Oh yeah, it just probably was this conversation on the podcast. I was like, oh, I guess it was a big deal. So yeah. But yeah, so the one thing, I think we've gone far enough that we're not going to come back and get it, is I missed at the start of all this, which was there was a step to help Mechanikos, collect his hammer, or like get that great hammer they needed to build the altar before we could even empower it, which was like, it's something in my mind that is never remembered. Like to this day, I rewatch the videos, I watch Novel do some of the quests, I don't remember doing those quests at all. So, but yeah, before you even start collecting all these things, there's a step where we went back to like help Mechanikos, or whatever his name is, like build or get this hammer, and also like empower Bronn, the big construct, too, at the same time. So, so at the end of that, that's when you first fix it, and then it's ready to be empowered over the next couple weeks. And then for whatever reason, Uther shows up. Like, I still don't know where he came from, but Uther's there. And I think what ends up happening is like after you rebuild it, I think you go to the Maw and you like you're fighting something, and like Uther shows up, and like Lithandra is there, and she's like, Uther, take care of these people. And you like beat up Uther, but then like right before you kill him, Uther's like, I'm sorry, I have a change of heart. And so like then he becomes a friend. Because I guess you make him realize that Lithandra like screwed him or something. I don't know, but he's there. So that chapter is actually pretty good, except the one thing that I'd missed through all of this after rewatching it was that at the time, Lasagna, who is actually the bad guy's name, was basically sacrificing Uther to take his power.
Yeah.
In the Maw. And it was at the command of Helya. Helya was there. I don't remember Helya being there, but in Novel's video, she's front and center. I don't remember that being there. But yeah, so like that's what was happening in the Maw when you went there, was you saw Uther almost being killed by Lasagna. And at that point he realizes, after you sort of save him, hey, maybe not everybody's so bad, and you bring him back to Ouroboros. And then you head over to Elysian Hold, because this is also the week where you finally collected all three of the artifacts, and they're going to empower it so they can do ascension. The Kyrian can continue with their ascensions. So that one was kind of okay. Like I got the places and the people, which I think is for me really good. But the reason,
one of the most important people,
hell yeah,
motivating factor for why Uther has a change of heart.
Yeah, I mean, those are like, you know, like minor. No, those are actually pretty big things. So that was real bad. But I hit them all, and I hit that Uther became friends with us. Plot points. So. But then at the end, there's a big battle. So like after you like get Uther, you go and figure out that Lithandra is attacking in the faraway place. Okay, so look, this is what happens at the end. I hate this, but she's like, you get this call. They're like, Lathendra and the dark elves are dark Kyrian are attacking in like the north. We must go there and protect it and drive them back. So you do this whole thing, and then she does like every other villain goes like, ha, this was just a distraction. And so what actually was happening is she was distracting you while she went after the head dude in your covenant, who I think is like the oracle or the big lady at the top. Or she looks like a lady. I don't know if she's a lady, but the person at the top that leads everything. So you attack this north thing, you like fight through all these hordes of like dark Kyrian, and like right when you're about to punch or like, you know, kill Lathendra at the little tower thing, she's like, haha, I'm not really here. This is a hologram. So you then have to race across the zone where like, you know, the Kyrian pick you up by the scruff of your neck and like fly you around. So you literally have to fly all the way back. And then you have like a big battle at the top of your covenant, and you like slay, I think you kill Lathendra in this case.
I think that one was actually really good.
Yeah. I think I nailed the biggest plot points. I think the biggest thing there was some like minor things. So like, it's not the Oracle, it's the Archon is the leader. Right. And I guess it's a female character. It's like Carestia. Carestia, I guess is what, how yeah. you pronounce that. Which, feminine sounding, I don't know.
It also has a female voice actor, so.
Yeah.
We'd science assume. Points in that direction.
We'll assume that. And then Uther, I missed Uther. I missed Uther being there. In terms of like, well, I think if we played it, I think I'd talk about the fact that you walk Uther to the edge and he jumps away.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I didn't realize he had to be there to help defeat Lasagna.
Yeah, so he showed up earlier than you said, basically.
Yeah.
Like, fairly minor, because he's basically, he shows up, and like, yeah, that's about the extent of it.
Yeah.
But we've got a little
And then, yeah, I think at the end, after Uther leaves, they like, finally empower the big crest, and good. So, Kieran, what I felt, I mean, other than the whole missing Mechanikos's, like, middle section. And then I think I did pretty well on that one.
Yeah. I do have a little bit from you here about Uther.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm going to play it now that you already explained what happened, because I can't quite remember where I need to jump to right now. So we're going to skip it.
I think I literally just described like there's like a 40, there's like a, not a 45 minute, but there's like a like 2 or 3 minute walk you take with Uther from the top all the way to the edge. And then he just jumps off, and it's like, and then you turn around, it's like, yay, party, we can make people ascended again. And like, I don't know.
So I don't remember him jumping off.
I feel like he disappeared. Oh God. All right. I'm going to have to do it.
I think he just went to study. Like, you left him with someone else and then they kind of walk away. But I did not get a chance to actually finish the novel video for the Kyrian campaign. So I'm going off of memory here.
Okay.
I don't think he actually jumped off a cliff at the end.
Really?
I'm pretty sure that he didn't.
Oh yeah, maybe they do just go and study. I don't know. Oh, they fly off. They actually fly off. They fly off. Sorry, I was just reconfirming with the video.
Fly, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, I think that one, you hit a bunch of the major plot points. What do you think of the Kyrian campaign?
In general? I mean, I'm not a fan of it. Because I think, here's my number one issue with it is I think the enemies are literally the Shah. And like, coming from like my favorite expansion ever, like I don't want to refight the same enemy, because like, I will compare what they did to what the Shah did, and like I think that these are like it's just not as interesting.
Big budget Shah.
Essentially, yeah. And the whole like the thing that actually really turned me off is the final chapter, in terms of just like it's the classic like the boss is attacking this area, let's go there, but it's really a distraction. We're sneak attacking you back at your base. Let's rush back and save you right at the last second type of
also thing. The last second redemption of a villain with no like consideration of the implications.
Right, yeah.
Like, I know it's Uther, but at the same time, it's like, you know, he helped just like kill a bunch of people, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there's no, yeah, there's just like, oh, he feels sorry or whatever. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. It's, yeah, that and like the whole, I think it was slow in the middle. Like,
yeah.
The, like, I actually, to be fair, chapter four, like forgetting an entire chapter to me, just whatever. It's just not as exciting. Like four and eight, like the chapter where you get the hammer, weak. And then the chapter where you go to the mall and like collect Uther, also weak, because nothing happens there. So in terms of rankings.
If you remembered Helya, something happens there.
Yeah, but it's like, I mean, it's Helya.
You have a point though, because it is basically just like Helya makes an appearance. And that's like, and Uther switches sides. So like, yeah, there's exactly. Plot points, but it's not a whole lot of like, it's going there and watching a cutscene more so than actually playing.
Yeah, like interacting and things like that. I thought, yeah. Though, I mean, I will say highlights like the Clea section of like going back and like meeting Ben and like going through that storyline. I actually do remember, like I remembered almost all of that rewatching it, which is.
Yeah, now that you mentioned it, I remember all of that. And I remember being extremely annoyed. Like I got to the end of the scenario that you do,
yeah,
as him, and just like the thing you're supposed to fight at the end just didn't spawn.
Oh, really?
So I had to restart it.
Oh, it's no. When I did it, I got annoyed, but I got annoyed for the opposite reason, where like I died. So I was like trying to be like, did I pull too much? Like thinking about like what was happening. And then I realized, because I didn't read, so I don't know what I'm actually doing here. But then I realized like, oh, I'm watching his final moments, and we're about to take his soul like to Ouroboros,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I didn't really pick up like rewatching again. The one thing I did pick up is like Clea being very concerned that all the souls were going in the mall and not anywhere else. Which, finding out, like knowing more of the story now, that's a really big deal.
Yes. Yes.
So, yeah. But yeah, it had some high points, but in general, I mean, I don't know if maybe we'll rank them at the end, but this is definitely on the lower end of ones I've enjoyed. So.
I do think this one suffered a little bit because it felt like part of it was actually spent reintroducing the other covenants, where you like go to the other covenants and you get their boondoggle to come and fight back in the pedestal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it felt forced and felt like this was supposed to be like that section maybe was supposed to be part of a different, like just like it's something everybody does and this is how you get to know the covenants, and then they got Axe, but then they needed content for the Kyrian campaign, so they put it back here. Like, I don't know. It just it didn't jibe with me.
See, I didn't know what to think of it at the time, but after doing the Maldraxxus, after doing Necrolord, because I did Necrolord second in terms of like my order, right? It was interesting doing Necrolord and seeing the Kyrians there for the same exact part where I remember doing it as Kyrian helping. So I was like, oh, they're gonna like intertwine all these different covenants helping each other, they're gonna be better bonded together. Not realizing that doesn't happen. Like the Bastion, like the Kyrian are the only ones that go to all four or all the other three. Like,
yeah.
No one else does that.
The Night Fae don't go to any of the others. I don't think they might go to Bastion, but they might be getting it mixed up with the Venthyr one.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, so yeah. And I don't know. Like Night Fae, but
it's really, really different.
Yeah. So it's funny.
You want to move on to Maldraxxus?
We can move on to Maldraxxus. Yeah, for sure. So Maldraxxus starts out with, okay, so a little bit of story before the campaign is like, I think essentially you reunite the houses because Maldraxxus is a set of like four or five houses and they like pick one to be the leader and that person leads them or something like that. So you reunite them over the course of the like the story when you level up, and then when you start the campaign, I think there's like one house that's still being idiots. So the first part is basically you do something to help help the houses or something. And like you do something for the first one. And this is the weird part about the Maldraxxus one. It's really what you're doing. And this is sort of, I'm going to spoil this one. I'm going to tell you what the end goal is. You're trying to dress up play dress up with the big statue in the Covenant Hall thing. Because like apparently Draka doesn't like it without clothes on. So you're literally going to these different houses and stealing clothes that are big enough to fit on a massive statue. So like the first place you go, you get gloves, I think. and you basically help them do something. Honestly, the first one's super forgettable.
Okay, so before we go to the second one, analogy, still great. I was dying laughing, but didn't cue my mic up when we were recording this on Tuesday.
Yeah.
It's a great, great analogy.
It is.
but I
was well off.
Oh, yeah. Like, you missed all of the stuff with the House of Constructs.
Yes. Yes.
You have a whole soul bind from there.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, I think what I, the biggest thing that I missed just going through it was part of the level up experience thing. And then just the reason, like, what you were doing. So I missed it. So the way that the campaign, at least the campaign portion opens, is that, like, Draka is taking over the seat of the Primus, and you've helped them do that throughout the story campaign of the zone by essentially defeating each of the different houses and, you know, basically empowering Draka to be the leader. What happens is everybody's pissed off. So there, you open the campaign with everyone attacking you. So you end up, like, having to fend off an attack at the seat of the Primus and push them back enough where the second week you go in and you then start to, like, help bolster their forces, right? So the second week is you, or I guess it's fourth week in terms of the campaign, but the second, you know, Maldrak's specific section is you actually going to, like, rebuild the ziggurat, like re-empowering the ziggurat that had, which I thought it was just a random one, but apparently it was one that had crashed. And what we were doing was we were going to the different houses.
We're going to get to the ziggurat because you talked about it in this.
Oh, do I?
Yeah, you do.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, before we get that. Before I get to the ziggurat, yeah. But I will say I missed the whole fact that, like, it's not one house acting up. It's literally every house. And it's just like Draka's house ends up winning, like, the, you know what I mean, in terms of the power. And everybody's still pissed off as you start your Covenant campaign. But the second one, where I think you get shoulders, the Kyrian bros show up, all right, that we just talked about them. They show up. And they're like, hey, we'll help you. If you give us a heart, we'll help you get your ziggurat back. And Draka's like, cool, dude. You can fly. We can't. So they, like, help. And you, like, fight on, like, the west side of the zone. You fight a bunch of, like, bad Maldraxxus people, which is really weird. Because they're not different colors. They're just, like, they're, like, demons still, right? Or whatever. It's not like the Dark Elves from the Kyrian. They're just, like, the same people, only they're bad. Which I don't understand. But you fight them and you get shoulders next. So you get sweet shoulders for your mannequin back in the class hall. But then you also get a ziggurat that flies around the zone. So you get that, but you don't do anything with it, at least from what I understand, because you never go back there. Like, literally, you basically did all this work to kill a bunch of demons who were kind of your friends at one point, probably, just so you get a thing that you fly around and don't do anything with. So I got that. I literally mixed four things into one. So, like, got the order all wrong. So, yeah. So I think the actual order of this is, so you start with everyone's attacking you. You push back the attack at your front door. And then you basically, with Vash, or Baroness Vash, not Lady Vash, but Baroness Vash, she devises a plan to essentially steal a ziggurat, or necropolis, I guess, or, you know, from one of the houses. And you basically, what you do is you end up recruiting people who know how to drive and operate that, because you can't do it by yourself. Right. So, like, part of yours is, like, you go to, like, I don't know all the houses, but there's, like, a House of Eyes, which is, like, the spiders, and there's the House of there's the one with all the liches. That house, you get a lich to actually, like, help you drive it. The spiders help navigate or whatever. So you do that and you basically rebuild the ziggurat, which then it helps you sort of protect the seat of the Primus. So that's, like, the goal of doing that. And then after that, what ends up happening is you work with Alexandrus Morgraine to stop what that Margrave dude did in Bastion, which is why the Kyrian folks are there.
Okay, yeah.
So that's when the Kyrian folks and you sort of join forces in terms of, like, stopping what's happening within I think it's about Draxus first and what they're doing there. And then, or sorry, no, it's you go to Bastion and stop sort of what's going on there. And then the next episode is you go to the House of Constructs with Morgraine and, you know, some Kyrian guys like Xandria. And you basically take on the House of Constructs, destroy the House of Constructs. But, and I didn't, to be fair, I still do not remember this. But at the end of that, you find a horde of anima from Revendreth, which then points you to potentially an issue with why is all this anima in Revendreth? Right. Or where, why is all this anima here in Maldraxxus from Revendreth?
Right.
Which sort of kicks off, I think, the next part of the story. But yeah, so totally got this section wrong, got it all mixed up in my head. And I think honestly, it's because of doing this one second and on an alt. I was confusing. Again, I'm thinking that like every campaign at this point is like intertwined. So like when the Kyrians show up, I'm like, oh, it's the same thing the Kyrians did. But it's sort of got the order mixed up.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
But that is the new order. And Margrave apparently is a very big deal. He's like the leader of the House of Constructs. So you eventually kill him. That's actually the heart. You give Margrave's heart to the Kyrian, by the way.
So Margrave is not a name.
Oh, sorry. That's the title, that's right? The title.
It's like Baron or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's the Margrave of each house is the head of the house. We're going to have some fun. I don't remember exactly. I got to figure out exactly where this is, but we're going to have some fun later with you stumbling over that.
So you do that, and then, okay, I don't know what happened. So this is where I'm totally lost, because I believe after you get the Ziggurat back up and running, I lose the story here. Because I know at a certain point you end up in Bastion, and you're like, oh, wait, is that with the Maldraxxus, right? Or am I confusing
you? You're asking the wrong person.
Okay, so let's just say this is what I think happens, but I might be confusing Venthyr and Maldraxxus. So Maldraxxus. So you save the Ziggurat, right? You've got this now flying fortress around that only goes around Maldraxxus that you never use at any other point in the entire rest of the story that I can remember. And then what ends up happening is you get like this call for help from the Bastion Bros, from the Kyrian. They're like, hey, why are these Maldraxxians attacking us at Necrotic Wake? And so you go with Uther, I think, and you like fight them back and you like kill the demons or whatever. Then you figure out that there's like this big bad guy who's taking over the final house that you haven't had. It's like the House of Regrets, I think, in the northeast of the zone. And so what happens is you're like, all right, that's where like the last house we got to get. They've been acting really weird. They're the ones that are causing all the trouble. So the House of Regrets, you go and you're like, Mordegrain Silverstone. I think that's the name of the head of that house at the time.
Oh my God, sorry.
Oh my God.
Mordegrain Silverstone.
What's actually the name of the Margrave of the House of the of Rituals?
Oh my God. That was real bad. I mean, we can stop. We can pause right here and I missed a big part here, which was like the whole fact that number one, you found anima from Revendreth after you defeated Germahl from the House of Constructs, right? And then you go to Revendreth and you get introduced to Kel'Thalas, which I think is big. You shut down all the Maldraxxi operations in Revendreth, and then the leader of those operations reveals that Kel'Thuzad is behind some of this. So like that's what sends you eventually to the House of Rituals, which is the final house that I described sort of at the start of this. So that's the part I missed out, was going to Revendreth. I don't know if I come back to it in this description, but yeah, I missed another big part here.
Yeah.
You go and you start to like yell at her. You're like, hey, like what's going on? What you find out is she's no longer in control. Kel'Thuzad is in control. So then you go undercover as an acolyte, and you do a bunch of stuff for Kel'Thuzad. You basically collect like some goat hair, or really it's not goat hair. It's like, what are the things that were in the underwater zone in BFA, the flying like ray looking things, manta rays, fel rays. They look like that, but you collect the hair from those like little like manta ray things. And then some other stuff, like you get like wings from a dragon and I don't know. And you go and see Kel'Thuzad, you know, like Kel'Thuzad's like, hey, I got to do this experiment on this Kyrian, bro. Can you get me this stuff? And you're like, hey, yeah, here, I want to be a sweet follower of yours. And so you help him get those materials. And as he's doing the event thing to basically do something with this Kyrian, bro, I think it's like to extract something or make him into something weird. I'm assuming the Kyrian bro is forgettable because they didn't have like a really interesting name. But I'm not going to lie, it could have been a very important Kyrian character that I just forgot. So, in any event, Kel'Thuzad's doing this sweet experiment. He goes to do it. And, of course, you collecting on the ingredients left like that one ingredient you got wrong. And it explodes everywhere. And then he figures out who you are, that you're not really an acolyte. You're like some imposter. And he throws you and this other lich guy that I failed to mention up until this point that had been helping you basically the entire way infiltrate this house. His name's like Blasphemous or Blalamir, something with a B. So then you're locked in jail. And then you do one of the most awful quests I have ever done in the history of World of Warcraft, which is you have to break yourself out of jail. And this is so vivid in my mind because I got so frustrated. So basically, you pick up this hand off the ground, and then you do, what was the Adams Family hand called? Was it just hand? Was it the thing?
I don't know.
But you basically act like the Adams Family hand. And you have to basically run a parkour event to then get to the switch that's up high on the wall to unlock your cells. The problem here, Emelson, is that it operates like a tank vehicle, meaning it does not turn. Like, it does not turn when you use the arrow keys. It also does not strafe. It just goes forward and sort of turns when you look somewhere. And you have to make like 90-degree jumps at a certain point. And so it literally, I fell off this thing. It probably took me 10 or 15 minutes. And it should have taken me maybe 2 if I was actually doing this good. Whew. So to be fair, I'm doing pretty well here. So I think the biggest thing, like other than what I explained,
the Meldrax's campaign, you are way, way better at this section.
Yeah. I don't know why either, but I did this one second. So I guess I just really remembered that leg thing that really pissed me off. So in any event, a couple of things to point out. The guy that's helping you's name is Balmadar, who's a ritualistic lich sort of helping you. You basically, the ritual that Kel'Thuzad was actually doing was essentially to breach the maw. So to be able to like build a portal or a way to get into and out of the maw. I think the Kyrian person he was sacrificing was not that important in the grand scheme of things. So I was right there. Yeah. But you did basically disrupt the ritual. You got found out. You got locked in jail. Margrave Sindane is the leader of the House of Rituals, his name. So I was well off that one. But I think ultimately, like, Kel'Thuzad was, like, trying to do this behind the back and taking over the house. So I think I think, honestly, it's because of that dumb hand quest that, like, burned into my brain everything that occurred right around this.
How novel did that quest?
No, I didn't, actually. I think I forget. Maybe
just spam jump and click it.
Wait, you can?
Yeah.
If I look at this, Emelson. He is spam jumping. I'd be so angry. But yeah, I was not happy about that. So.
Like, the quest is obviously broken. I now know how to do it when I get there. Because I'm working on the DK very slowly. And they're going to be, I believe, Necro Lord is to play.
Gotcha.
Except me. I don't know if in Mythic or if in Raid it's still worth going Kyrian, but I haven't actually looked yet. But I'm thinking it's probably Necro Lord, so... Yeah,
that's funny. I didn't realize you could do that, but yeah, for me it was frustrating. But no, lore wise, I was pretty much on point. So other than names, I'm very bad with names in general. So
we'll give you a pass on names, except in very funny cases like Margrave Sindane.
So awful. So in any event, you finally break yourself out of jail with Blasphemer. You like run outside of the thing, and Kel'Thuzad's like, I don't know, like, now you are bad and we'll fight. And so you fight Kel'Thuzad and then you don't really kill him there, but you like portal away and you go see Draka. And then Draka's like, come back next week once we have our forces all together, which essentially means like, come back. It's going to take us a week to ride north, what takes you 30 seconds to take on a flight point. So then you like ride to that northeast place and with Draka and a bunch of other people, General Draven's there from the Venthyr campaign, which I'm assuming, which is important because I'll get to it. And this is where they overlap. So, and then I actually did see something interesting. So hold on. So I'm excited because I remember this part because I actually just did this like, I think Saturday or whatever, like Friday last week.
That's cheating.
I just got enough for now. So when we talked about it on the podcast, I had done it, but I actually ended up not. Well, anyway, we'll get into it. So you basically go and attack this north place, like Draka's there, General Draven, Emery, some other people that are kind of important. And so you attack the place and you finally get to Kel'Thuzad at the end. And then they do the whole thing where like, heroes, you must take on Kel'Thuzad by yourself. We'll keep the others busy. So like, NPCs fight NPCs, and then you're just fighting Kel'Thuzad, and you get him, you don't kill him, but you get him low enough that you think you kill him. And then you weaken him or whatever, and they're like, you know, once you weaken him, that original person I said, like, Morgraine Sylvasius, her first name begins with an M, and her second name begins with an S. We'll call her Morgraine Sylvasius. She, like, breaks free of her chains and says, Kel'Thuzad, why did you ruin this house? We're really sorry. And then the Venthyr bros. The reason I know this is because I was actually writing an email for work as I finished this. So I just didn't skip the cutscene. So it was like playing in the background as I'm writing this email. What ends up happening is like she breaks free or whatever. Kel'Thuzad's like, oh, when we can say like, oh. And like General Draven walks up and says, we got this. And like snatches some medallion off of Kel'Thuzad's chest, which I'm assuming is what happens at the Venthyr campaign, although I don't know that for sure. In any event, he snatches this medallion. And then, you know, Kel'Thas is also there. And he's like, all right, now we can kill him. We got our medallion. And like, Draven's like, it's not for us to decide his fate. And Kel'Thas is like, oh man, I really want to kill him. And then like, as he's saying this, all these like, the jailer bros that aren't the Dark Kyrian, but the, whatever the jailer bro fly guys are called, they come out of some random portal because, of course, people can make portals wherever they want. They can't leave the mall, quote unquote, leave the mall, but they can come and like steal people, and they come out and steal Kel'Thuzad from you.
I do like that you pointed out that little thing at the end where like apparently Kel'Thuzad was trying to make a portal, a gateway in and out of the mall, and yeah, then he just like gets yoinked by them already doing exactly that. And I know. Yeah. I know if we talk to someone who is actually into the lore, they'd be like, oh, it's a matter of scale. Like, this is something they can go through. They can take him through it, but they can't, right, like, transport an army through it or whatever. But, like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was... Yeah, that one I think I nailed pretty well. Just so I actually watched the cutscene. So I knew how that one ended. I mean, didn't know names again. Margrave, Syndane, you know, of course, you get the final piece of the puzzle of the dress up for your little medallion, your little the staff. So, but yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that, like, just from a lore perspective, interesting that we really haven't killed anybody yet, I'd say, like any major character. So, like,
we killed Willow Blossom.
I mean, major character. Willow's a speed bump, you know what I mean? bump of the road on our...
I mean, she's really a speed bump now.
Yeah, it's true. Jesus. But Kel'Thuzad apparently can come back. So the one thing I wanted to point out here at the end was the interesting part about when I was watching Noble's video of these is that he left in the sort of discussions between Draka and Alexandros Morgraine, who is not Uther. I think that's the one thing I don't think you mentioned yet, is that I said Uther came to help. Yeah. It's actually Alexandros Morgraine. There's conversations between Draka and Alexandros Morgraine, and like one of them's about like their kids. So like, of course, you know, Alexandros had both. What was his kids? I don't know.
Darian and... I don't remember.
He had a good one and a bad one.
Yeah.
So he mentioned that like, oh, the... you know, one of them ruined me and the other one saved me or whatever. So I thought, and then Drac was like, I had a son. I wonder what happened to him. And isn't okay, so I was like, oh man, that's cruel. Cause Draka's Thrall's mom, right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Cause I was excited thinking he was that, but I didn't know. I forgot. Then I was like, no, shit, is it really?
You're totally correct.
Yeah. So I thought that was an interesting moment. Of some of like the conversation, which isn't a part of the campaign. It's just like flavor text they have as they're sitting in your covenant spot. But yeah, I thought that was interesting. So that's the Maldraxxian one. You sort of basically, it's not even unite the houses. You sort of just like exert your dominance over the other houses. And now everybody in Maldraxxus is sort of like aligned to like, at least at this point, attacking Sire Denathrius.
Yeah.
So.
Yes.
Yeah, the whole Venthyr tie-ins on the Maldraxxus piece.
Going to the Venthyr part.
Yeah, I didn't even talk about that.
Like they just show up at the end the way you told it.
Yeah, and I didn't realize it. So I didn't, in my version, you never go and help them.
Right.
But you actually do go and help them. and that's where you meet Kel'Thalas for the first time, and then you also see Kel'Thuzad being behind some of it. So yeah, totally missed that. Real bad. So
Up next.
Oh yeah.
Oh, actually, before Venthyr, what do you think of the Maldraxxus campaign?
What do I think about it? I will say that it's actually fairly interesting because they take you, like, even though I didn't remember much of the middle and things like that, I think it introduces some interesting characters, right? I think character-wise it's much stronger than the Kyrian. Because it's rooted in lore characters like we're aware of. Like I might not know everything Alexandros Morgraine has done or was stood for, right? But I know the Morgraine name. So that was interesting. Like, Draka. Vash is there. Kel'Thuzad, right? So I think it had much more in terms of like high profile characters. I wish they would have done more with the sort of necropolis / ziggurat. I always call it a ziggurat, but I guess it's actually a necropolis.
I mean, a ziggurat is an accurate name except it flies, but you know.
Yeah. So I wish I would have done more with that because you do spend like almost 2 full weeks in a plan to steal that and then like get it up and working and then stealing it, right? So I wish they would have done more around that, but yeah, story-wise, I think I liked it a little better. Better characters, and then I think the final few sections, the ending was very satisfying in terms of like the, you find out the big bad guy and then next week we take him down, right? Which I think is fine. Like it would have been nice to do it all in 1 week, but understand pacing wise, it makes sense to split those two up. So it felt a lot longer though. Like the final few chapters felt longer to go through as Necro than Kyrian so far. So,
are you sure that's not just because you spent 15 minutes piloting a little hand?
Probably, God. Fuck that question. Oh, God. Yeah, probably. I mean, that definitely probably contributes. But no, it was, I'd say it was better. To me, it was better than the Kyrian campaign. For sure. I don't know if it was my favorite one. I think based on what I remember,
better than the Kyrian one.
Well, yeah, I definitely better than Kyrian. Based on what I remember of Venthyr, it's probably better than Venthyr, but I think we're going to find out. I don't remember much of the Venthyr campaign.
Yeah, let's get into that.
Oh, God. Okay. Fuck. So I don't technically remember much of what happens at all in the Venthyr campaign.
What do you mean technically?
So I don't remember much. It's so forgettable as a campaign that I will hit probably like 4 things. This is actually going to be a really quick one. So what I remember happening is that you are doing a bunch of like things to help Denathrius, right? Because at this point, like, you still think Denathrius is a good guy for the first couple weeks. And then you find like a broken mirror and you do a bunch of work to piece together that mirror. When you go through it, you meet someone who essentially, I think, tells you Denathrius is bad and you end up believing them. So what you then go around and do is essentially try and find out a way that you can defeat Denathrius, we'll say.
Was any of that actually a part of the Covenant campaign?
No.
No. That was all leveling.
So the mirror thing is kind of true.
There are other broken mirrors.
Mirrors that I repair, which I guess is, as a Venthyr, you do that multiple times. So we'll just say, no, none of that was a part of the campaign quest so far. Which I think we probably still have to keep listening, because I don't know when I actually touch on something that's a part of the campaign.
We're going to, let's continue.
God. And so, like, you go around and one of the mirrors you go in, you go to, like, this woman's house, and she's called the Accuser, I think. And so you, like, eat dinner there, and she tells you about this stuff, and then you're like, all right, well, let's go do it. So then you go do it, and the do it part is you essentially are breaking, you're not breaking Kel'thas out of jail, but you, like, figure out that he has been freed from Denathrius's prison of, like, giving all the anima. And you try and essentially put him on the right path, which is basically saying he needs to help you guys win. So you do some work to, like, convince Kel'thas that you're, like, good guys, that you're saving him or whatever. And that you can kind of go through all his memories, too, because people are like, I don't think he's really worth it to save. And the Accuser's like, no, we should save him. And everybody's like, ah, dude, he's kind of a crazy person. And so, like, look at what everything he's done. And you basically go in, and I think you're deleting his memories at this point. But there's all these memories of, like, him, like, doing stuff, like, throughout his life where, you know, him, like, taking his people to, like, Outlands and, like, blowing up the World Tree or something, or the font. What's the big thing with the World Tree? Not the World Tree. Where the Night Elves get all their power.
The Sunwell?
The Sunwell, yes, thank you. And other stuff, like, in old lore, you know, not in current lore, which is much better. So... We should probably pause here, because I literally have missed the entire point of the campaign. So this section might just be as long as all the other ones combined, because I literally have to explain the entire campaign. So Kel'thas, in terms of, like, when it is, like, the third chapter.
Before you go all the way, you do talk more about the intersection with Maldraxxus later. We're going to get to that.
Okay.
Like, after this point, you actually are a lot closer. But up until this point...
Well off. So, what actually happened? So, essentially, first up, you know Denathrius is bad at this point. You know it's before the end of the camp, before the start of the campaign.
You literally find out, like, 20 minutes into the zone while you're questing.
Yeah. So what ends up happening is that you meet this guy, Prince Renathal. Who essentially is trying to unite sort of the different leaders, I guess, across Revendreth to, like, push back or, like, help revolt against Cyrodiil and Athreus. So it's kind of similar to, like, the Maldraxxus campaign in terms of the houses. You're trying to get these four, like, leaders to help you. And it's the Countess, the Tithe Lord, and the Stone Right are, like, the three. So basically, to do that, you go around and you are collecting their medallions. To then place this is, I think I talk a little bit about this, by the way, in my description, but I now understand the medallions go into where your covenant sanctum is around the building, and that says, like, hey, we're pledging allegiance to help support or whatever. So the first one is actually the Countess, and what you do is you basically have to like sneak in someplace and basically help her uncover a plot. Around people who I think are trying to kill her or, like, overthrow her. And in terms of helping her uncover and foil that plot, she gives you one of the medallions you need. So she gives you one of the medallions you need, basically. So then the next person you help is the curator. And this is the one, this is another broken mirror one. So she hid her medallion in a mirror that is broken. So basically what you end up doing is you end up having to find a bunch of individuals that may have pieces of that mirror, and you piece back to the mirror, and then you end up, like, once the mirror is put back together, you can go to the mirror, get that medallion. The big one that I don't actually remember this, but I guess you actually go to Bastion for the next medallion, which is not really a medallion. It's called the Crown of Harvesters. And you work with old Mechanicos, and you're around that forge area. Again, this forge area is like a black hole of me understanding, because I think that's where you actually get the hammer from the Bastion quest. Sorry.
Right.
Any event, you go to this forge, you do a bunch of stuff around the forge. I think you actually do kill some of the Shalkirian around this. And eventually after you help Mechanicos, he basically crafts this crown for you, which you then take back and again in power. So up to this point in Revendreth, you've essentially taken each week to go and collect something from someone by helping them either recover it itself and then they give it to you, or recover something else and they'll give it to you. And then I think the next section of this gets into the Kel'Thalas portion, which I think I already described a little bit. You do get introduced to him, and your goal is essentially to help him move, you know, back on a path of like righteousness or whatever. Like, and you try and sort of get a bunch of burdens off of him. Number one being, you know, Kel'Thalas essentially lives in the past, so these memories you're seeing are kind of all the missteps that he made along the way, in terms of like decision making. You're trying to help him get that off his mind. So
I do think it's interesting. So going back to the curator section, did you ever play the Myst games?
Yes.
Do you remember the stuff where like they had the books to go to the different worlds? And right. One of the ways they would trap people in different worlds is by taking the pages out of the book.
Yes.
That was the conceit of the game, right?
Yeah.
The curator section of like, oh, we hid this thing behind a mirror and we broke the mirror and hid the pieces is like,
yeah. It's very much, very reminiscent of that. Yeah, that makes sense. Giving it to different people too. Yeah, so nobody has all the pieces. That's a lot. That makes a lot more sense than whatever the hell I just described, I'll tell you, in terms of like a story. So
you spent almost as much time talking about the last chapter of the Necrolord campaign as you spent talking about the entirety of the Venthyr campaign.
So
let's go ahead and finish that up now.
Then, for whatever reason, you again have to fight other Venthyr people. And I don't understand, like, you're essentially like in every campaign, like shutting down some sort of insurrection, I feel like. So in the Venthyr one, you're shutting down an insurrection. You kill this like Mambo Jumbo. I think it's a lich again, but not Kel'Thuzad. It's a different one before. And you get some like really powerful items. Oh, that's the forgot. So like as you're doing these things, you're like getting crests that you put into like the building, like the model in the middle of your Covenant campaign, which I guess powered up or something. I don't know. You get like crests that you like slam in there. Prince Renathal like asks you to do that, which I think powers something up. I don't know what though. So in any event, you've now like got Kel'Thas and you and him are like fighting this bad lich, and then you figure out, oh crap, the reason there's been so much unrest is Kel'Thuzad is back. So then you go on like a final assault on Kel'Thuzad, and what ends up happening is you fight him in Revendreth, and he like you like push him back or whatever, and you're like fighting a bunch of those things, and then you end up, okay, in the original thing that I remember, you end up killing him in Revendreth. And then it ends, and then Kel'Thas is just like, oh, hey, I'm going to go find myself. Similar to Uther, I think, right? And like some of the other Venthyr people are like, I don't think that's a good idea to let him on his own. But then the Accuser and Prince Renathar are like, no, he needs to find himself. And then he goes and he finds himself. And then you've killed Kel'Thuzad too. But again, I don't remember going to Maldraxxus in the Venthyr campaign, even though that's how the Maldraxxus campaign ends.
Yeah. Which I brought this up when we were talking on Tuesday, but for a time, when the last chapter of the Venthyr campaign came out, mm-hmm. the cutscene did not work. So you actually got dumped at the end of the campaign. You got dumped back in your Covenant Sanctum, just like unceremoniously. as if like you got Kel'Thuzad's health to zero, and it just threw you back there. So I could totally see how you thought that you had killed Kel'Thuzad. It's a little bit stranger that you didn't remember going to Maldraxxus and doing the same exact scenario that they do.
Yeah, that's a miss on my part, we'll say. It's a slight miss on my part. So I think a couple things that I could have probably done a little bit better here. Number one, when I say you fight like a lich but not Kel'Thuzad, it's actually that you're fighting the Tithe Lord, which is one of the original people I talked about you wanted to like get on your team, but you find out that the Tithe Lord is actually helping Kel'Thuzad siphon anima over to Maldraxxus. So that's who you confront to then learn that Kel'Thuzad's the one actually behind the plot. So you confront, kill the Tithe Lord, stop that, and then you realize Kel'Thuzad's part of the deeper plot, and then the next chapter, the next week, you go to Kel'Thuzad to get that final Minion of Dominion or Medallion of Dominion.
I mean, if you overlook the like putting the final fight in Revendreth, like having already explained what happened at the end in the Maldraxxus one, I think you're pretty close.
Yeah. I mean, it's. I don't remember going to Maldraxxus.
So now that you actually remember everything else that happened in the Venthyr campaign, what do you think of it?
I start out my discussion, and I would say this is probably a full 180 in that I think the Venthyr one might be my favorite. Having actually read through and understood what it's about and like learned the story a little bit better, I think it was my favorite one story-wise. I don't know why I have such a bad memory in terms of like what I actually did for it, but I think it provides like the best sort of story, right? Because like, so the way my mind is like, Sardanathrys is found out to be bad, so all of the different areas or houses, you could call them whatever it is, right, of Revendreth are sort of splintered, and this Prince Renthal wants to sort of bring them together. So like the best way you can do that is by, trying to support the leaders of each one. So it's more of like there's like a common thread, and it's not like you're doing this just to like, we got to get powerful, so let's get everybody together. Or like in the Maldraxxus one, like I don't know why all the houses hate each other, right? Because I'm assuming at a certain point they were friendly. Maybe they were never friendly, and that's the idea. But at least with like this one, I understood like, oh, I remember doing this scenario at the end of Leveling where like Denathrius blows up half of Revendreth, right, with the anima stuff. And things like that. So like I actually enjoyed it, right? Like I think now that I know what's happening, I think I would say this might be my favorite campaign from like a story perspective.
I would say it's up there for me as well. I have a suspicion on why you don't remember the beginning part of it, and I think it's because if you were like me and you were doing two characters at the same time the first few weeks, and just like you actually paid some attention on your monk, you obviously missed some things being Kyrian, but you got a lot of it, and then just like totally phoned it in on
my paladin.
The Venthyr one is just like skip the cutscene, ignore the dialogue, 15 bare asses, you got it, man.
Yeah, I can tell you I did a lot more. That's ultimately probably what is definitely what happened, because my time spent doing this on my paladin was definitely like end of night, last, like I'll do like part of a chapter right before bed. Because the more I think about it, the more I do remember doing the crown portion of Venthyr, but like I remember the crown, but I don't remember how I got it. So Venthyr, after rereading, like re-explaining what it was and actually going through and listening and understanding, I think the Venthyr one might be my favorite, to be fair. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I mean, so that brings us to the end of a lore with a nom. And I think we have enough time left, given how quick my explanation of the Night Fae one was, to actually go through the Night Fae one as well. So we get a little bit of lore with Emelson, too.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Time to see how bad I was. So it starts off with going to find Tyrande. Taranda, if you remember, at the very beginning of the story for Shadowlands, jumped into the mall with you and then was never seen again. So we're going to go and find her. And we do. And she's crazy. So we can't reason with her. And we go back to the Night Fae area and basically get told, come back next week when we have an idea on how to deal with Taranda. So you come back next week and basically you're like, well, this is the land of the dead and Taranda's not the first Night Warrior. So we're going to go and we are going to find a dead Night Warrior and get them to tell us how to help Taranda so she doesn't go stark raving mad. So you find them and then get told to come back next week. Next week, though, the Night Warrior campaign, there's somewhere in here, the Night Warrior campaign is like temporarily suspended and you go and you instead are dealing with the Loa. So our good friend Bronsamdi shows up and wants some help because I don't know exactly, Muzala is doing some spooky bullshit. So you get tasked with going and finding the various Loa to keep them from basically being consumed by Muezala. And so, spoiler, we were too late. We find a couple and they're dead, including some of the Loa that were from Zul'Drak, if you remember way back in Wrath. The ones that died in Zul'Drak. But notably, we find Hikar's like seed, and it's not drained, but also Hikar is not there anymore. So that's how Hikar ends up in the other side, I guess, is Hikar made a deal with Muzala.
Okay.
And there's some connection, I don't remember exactly, there's some connection between the guys with the masks in Ardenweald and Muzala. They're like under his mind control when they get the mask put on, I think. Okay, so a couple things. First off, I am vastly overselling how linear these things are. It's like alternating every week which yes. one you deal with. And second, the guys with the masks are actually totally separate from Muzala. There's three plot threads. There's the Night Warrior plot thread. There's the Loa and Muzala plot thread. And then there is the Drust plot thread, which is actually what the guys in the masks are, is they're under the control of the Drust. Right. Which the stuff with the Loa, I think I got a lot of that actually. There's a little bit that I miss of like when somebody trying to make a deal with the Winter Queen and getting told basically to fuck off. Right. And then I'm gonna get back to the Night Warrior stuff in a second. But I guess kind of like a lot of the finale with the Drust stuff I actually missed because I switched to Kyrian, so I missed the last two chapters of the campaign, which are all about the Drust.
Gotcha.
We'll get there. So that's if you've done the leveling campaign and paid attention to what was going on, that's a part of the leveling campaign that kind of gets not resolved but explained a little bit. And then you go back on the Night Warrior train and the dead Night Warrior is like, you know, I'm not touching this shit with a 10-foot pole, because it not only made him go crazy, but then when they tried to de-crazy him, it like killed his wife and friends. And so he refuses. Except then like one of them ends up kidnapped somehow. And so you go and save them from the sprites who, like, I don't know how an ancient Night Warrior gets kidnapped by sprites, but okay, dude. And then he's like, oh man, I'm so grateful. I guess I will help you after all. And that's as actually as far as in the campaign as I got, because then I switched to Kyrian. Yeah.
So that's the end.
That's the end as far as I got. There's a couple more chapters. You go and find Holmheim Mountain,
mm-hmm.
who is a renowned hunter in the Wild Hunt. And yep. you basically convince him to come and help you track down more Night Warrior people. But before that, you gotta help him with some of the Hungering Destroyer kind of things. They're attacking the zone. And then you go back to the Drust stuff and you actually have a big battle with the Drust. And they do exactly what you were complaining about in the Kyrian campaign.
Yep, I saw this.
Where they bait you into fighting and then reveal at the very end of the fight, this is the dumbest stuff. The absolute dumbest stuff. At the end of the fight, there's a cutscene that plays, and in it, Moonberry is like, I sense magic. Like, no shit, Sherlock. And then there's an illusion that gets dispelled, and it's actually Aralon, who I didn't mention earlier, but is a warrior that appeared to be just like a no-name warrior at the time, but got kidnapped, and was basically mind controlled and under that illusion. And then there's a what's supposed to be like a sad thing where you like mourn their death. It actually just is like kind of like, well, that's bullshit. Because if she could dispel the illusion at the end, like why couldn't she dispel the illusion at the start?
Exactly.
I don't know, but then you go kill the big bad for real. And the Winter Queen shows up as like your Deus Ex Machina kind of thing and leads the Drust off into their own, like, I don't know, prison realm or something. I have not actually done that part, so I get a pass on not having the details on it down.
Gotcha. Do you know, I didn't get a chance to watch the end of the Night Fae one, but did they ever sort of clean up under, like, what happens to Tyranda?
Nope.
Yeah, so it's still like an open thread. That's what I thought.
Hang on. We now have as open plot threads from each of the four campaigns. From Kyrian, we have Uther.
Uh-huh.
From Maldraxxus, we have Kel'Thuzad.
Yep.
From Venthyr, we have Kael'thas.
Mm-hmm.
And from Night Fae, we have Tyranda.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting.
It's almost
like they're setting themselves up for more content in 9.1.
Like maybe some new soul binds.
Oh, I hadn't even thought of that. That would be,
There's definitely going to be new soul binds.
Yeah, I mean, yes, there are 100% going to be new soul binds. I don't know how I would feel about them using these old lore characters as like soul binds.
That'd be weird.
Also, the fact that Kel'Thuzad is still 100% an enemy.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I mean, it seemed pretty good. What'd you think of what you got to play, at least of the first like six or so chapters?
I liked it. I liked it a lot more than the Kyrian one.
Okay.
I think it and the Venthyr one are like up there for me. But at the same time, like, I was expecting the Night Warrior stuff to get kind of somewhat resolved, and they just leave it on a cliffhanger, and I hate that. So, a little bit lower, so maybe Venthyr is my top one, which I also did Venthyr on my Paladin. So I've done three of the four. I haven't done Maldraxxus.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
So
interesting. Yeah, I mean, so the Bwon Somni stuff sounds really cool with, like, the Loa and everything like that. But, because I think there's just... What I watched or what I read through at least was like
this. Oh yeah, there's actually more Loa stuff after. So there's like three more chapters that I didn't get to do, and there's more Loa stuff at the end as well.
Yeah.
And Vol'jin shows up.
Yep.
Spoilers, I guess, but if you did the BFA quest with Vol'jin, you'll know what's up. So.
Yeah. But yeah, overall, I mean, interesting. So you would put this sort of maybe your number two in terms of what you've done so far?
Yeah, probably so.
Fair enough.
And I think from the sounds of it, Venthyr had a stronger campaign outside the ending than Maldraxxus.
Yeah.
But then it like Maldraxxus shares the ending with Venthyr, so I would say Venthyr's above Maldraxxus.
I would
have actually played the Necrolord one, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem with the Necrolord one is just that whole like ziggurat necropolis thing is just, it's like two wasted weeks, right? For like a slight move in plot point. So
that's kind of what I felt like for the Kyrian one, is you waste 4 weeks first getting the hammer and then getting the three boondoggles, and then you start doing story again.
Yeah, exactly.
So like half the campaign for Kyrian is filler.
Yeah. But no, I mean, I think all of them were fairly well. I mean, they're all well done. Like, I think WoW does a really good job story wise of putting stuff together. But yeah, Venthyr definitely. Although I said in my sort of recap, this is forgettable, I think it's probably my favorite now that I've actually read the story. And if I were to do this, if I was to ever level something again and actually go through all the Covenant stuff, I'd probably just be Venthyr to start, just to do that one. And then swap, right, at the end. But yeah, Venthyr, I think, was a strong number one. I don't know what I'd put in my number two. I'd probably end up putting Maldraxxus and then, like, Kyrian third. In just terms of what I've done. So the Night Fae though probably makes a strong contender for me to be like maybe two on my list, just because I like the lore character wise, like, you know, Tyrande, Bonsamdi, you know, Vol'jin all being there seems like it's some cool stuff could happen. So
But, I think the only one that has more lore characters involved than the Night Fae is the Necrolord one.
Yeah, and then you get me who thinks Morgrem is really Uther, and
not even close.
Oh man, right, any other lore topics we want to touch on?
No, I mean, we covered the Covenants. Definitely some points we missed.
Yes,
but.
I think we did. I think in general, I actually feel like I know the story. I know the story of Shadowlands better than I've known the story of probably the past 7 expansions.
How much of that is because you did the prep for this episode?
100% because I did the prep for this episode. 100%. But I'm actually excited. Like, so it's funny. I've said this before. We're like, hey, whenever I level my second character, I'm not going to skip anything. I'm actually going to listen to lore and like do that. And No. But I think I might, like, because I always say that and then I'm like, I can probably miss this, not that big a deal. But having spent like the, you know, 2-3 hours to like go through all this, watch the videos or whatever, it's been interesting. Like, I feel like I should pay better attention to the story for sure. So
yeah. So all cool. Right, is it time for what might now be your second favorite section?
Yes, that is true. That is true. It is time for Q&A. So as always, Emils and I are here to answer your questions. You can, you know, of course, send them to us earlier on in the week, reach out on Discord. If you're here live, as we stream this on Twitch, you can ask in Twitch chat, or you can, you know, tweet at us. I don't know, however you want to get in contact with Emils and I, get a old message to us and we'll answer it on the show. So there's a couple we got live, and then we got two that sort of wrote in earlier in the week. So I'm going to take the live ones first because I think they're just a little bit more appropriate, and then we'll end on some fun ones. So Bearfoo, coming in hot from Discord, asks, there's some debate among the WoW community about the effects of fel magic on souls, which only got stronger with Shadowlands. The question is Varian's soul truly gone after Legion? Or is there any chance you think he might make an appearance as an example to help save Anduin from Torghast?
There is a 0% chance that a somewhat popular major lore character is actually gone for good. Like, 0% chance. The only thing Blizzard likes doing more than redeeming villains is resurrecting popular characters.
Yeah. Yeah, so I would say that, you know, that Varian is probably somewhere, potentially making a comeback. I think the introduction of Shadowlands, maybe not in Shadowlands itself, right? In the story of Shadowlands, but potentially in whatever 10.0 or even 11.0 ends up being. Shadowlands gives them that conduit, I think, now to build those characters back in.
And also, like, they have a way now to... They kind of wrote themselves a way to explain, oh, fel magic could destroys the soul, as like, well, it just makes the soul inaccessible to resurrection and the other, like, commune with the dead kind of things that we can do.
Right.
Very loose term there, but
yeah,
the people of Azeroth can do.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So
because there's stuff like the Maw where you just, they're stuck in the Maw. There's nothing you can do.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, like all, yeah. So, I mean, I think that we probably, I mean, I don't know if we see him in 9.0 ever, right? Like in sort of the Shadowlands expansion, but I would not, yeah, you're right. It's not a 0% chance. It's definitely a non-0% chance we do see him. And it might be cool to see him. Maybe in sort of like a flashbacky, like, go save the world, Anduin, like give his son a pep talk type thing. Love to see the little blonde boy cry, maybe a little bit more. So, yeah, no, but Barefu, thank you for the question. Barefu also has a follow-up question, which is, what does Emelson want for his birthday? Which I believe is coming.
Saying happy birthday.
Which I believe is coming up. What, next week, right?
No, my birthday's every day, you know.
Oh, damn it. Okay, fair enough. I tried. But yeah, so you want him to stop saying happy? Okay, I mean, Barefu, there you have it. What Emelson wants is for you to stop mentioning that it's his birthday on his birthday, which is next week, I believe. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. That's awesome. All right. Well, Barefu, thank you for both questions. Yeah. So we turn to now some additional questions that were sort of sent in earlier this week. We have one from Soji, hashtag delete SEF. They ask, Godzilla or King Kong? King Kong, whose side are you on?
King Kong. He's not radioactive.
Really? So,
I mean, okay, Godzilla's got like 50 years of retcons and changes. Yeah. So there are versions of Godzilla that aren't like usually radioactive, but Godzilla was, for a lot of the time that he existed as a character, like, highly radioactive.
Yeah. We can go with that version. We can go with the. Yeah.
So, like, that's my reasoning. Other than that, I mean,
So in a fight though, you would still take King Kong over Godzilla? King Kong
fucking toast.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about that because I think this is in reference. There's a movie coming out, or they announced a movie of Godzilla versus King Kong. Yeah. So I think if I'm gonna be friends with someone, King Kong makes sense because he's not gonna. Other than actively trying to kill me, I can be around him, right? Yeah. I can ride on his shoulder. You know, he might just smash me like a bug, but we can be friends. Godzilla, I'll get radiation poisoning, probably die. So,
yeah.
But yeah, in a fight, I would say Godzilla. I would say Godzilla wins in a straight up fight.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. And then Hursty Zikletti's scenario. God, fuck this guy. Hursty has a follow-up question to Soji's, which is, do you think Mothra would win against both, or at least one? And if so, justify your answer.
So I think Mothra would beat King Kong. And it's because all Mothra has to do is pick King Kong up from their back, and they can't do anything. They can't reach back there to, like, swat them. Because your arms can't... Like, maybe...
He's a gorilla, so aren't gorilla arms longer in general? So, like, he's going to... As a human, I would agree. But, like, as a gorilla, his arms, I believe, are longer, right? So he could get back there.
Hmm.
I mean, here... So I'll be completely honest with you. I know nothing about the Godzilla lore. So,
I've already used all of my knowledge on it, so...
Well, what I was just doing, if you notice, I was Googling what the hell Mothra was because I didn't know.
Mothra's a giant moth.
That's, well, now that I'm on the same page, Mothra's a bitch, dude. All right, so number one, it's a moth, all right? So it's not poisonous. It's got wings and little legs. So, like, the idea that Mothra is going to take either of these guys is absurd, right? So I would say that like Mothra doesn't win against either of them. Not win against, if it's both of them at the same time, Mothra's dead in like inside of 30 seconds. Even one-on-one, like Godzilla, I think is going to make shorter work of Mothra, particularly because he can breathe fire. He's a radioactive large dragon. He's got really sharp claws, right? So yeah. I think Godzilla just shreds some wings, gets Mothra. Once Mothra's on the ground, dude, lights out. Like, yeah. And then I think King Kong, I think you're right. So if Mothra can surprise King Kong, get the jump, maybe get up behind him where King Kong can't reach back, right? I think there, you know, Mothra's got a chance, but I still think, like, long-term, like, you can't, I don't think you can drop, I don't think Mothra, you know, judging by the wings and, like, you know, I don't think Mothra can get high enough in the atmosphere to drop King Kong from such a height that kills him, right? Which I think is the only thing that Mothra can do. Like, Mothra's literally playing the seagull game where they pick up clams, they slam them against rocks to try and eat the inside. Like, that's what Mothra's trying to do. I don't think she can get King Kong high enough to do that.
Yeah.
If Mothra's a girl, I'm assuming it's a girl. I don't know. These things are weird.
I will say, so when I was a kid, one of my friends had like Godzilla King of Monsters game. There was a brawler for GameCube. And Mothra was really annoying. Extremely annoying. And I think that's really the angle that Mothra plays if they want to win any fight against either of these.
Gotcha. Let's see. What is Mothra's powers?
Right, bug.
Okay. So let me. So I'm gonna read from the Wikipedia page. Like, does Mothra have any powers?
I think it's all like, what could a big bug do? Well, they flap their wings and it's like a typhoon, I guess.
Gotcha. Okay. But she doesn't have like, or Mothra doesn't have like some sort of like.
It's not like Butterfree or whatever from Pokemon where
like. That's what I was thinking, like Spirit Dust or Sleepy Dust.
No, there's nothing like that. As far as I know. Which, like, I've established the extent of my Godzilla monsters exposure was getting really annoyed by Mothra in a GameCube game 20 years ago.
Gotcha. Yeah, one of these things says like Mothra can be lit on fire. Like she gets lit on, or it gets lit on fire.
I mean, I assume
during a battle
that can happen. Yes.
I mean, I would assume. I mean, Mothra. I mean, to be fair, like the idea that Mothra's got a number one, use the artist surprise, swoop in, swoop out, get the pecs in, right? But the minute Godzilla or King Kong gets a hold of a wing, Mothra's toast. Like her ground game is non-existent, right? So, yeah. I mean, I still think, you know, whether it's solo 1v1 or 2v1 against Mothra, Mothra loses every one of those. Yeah. The giant moth, dude. Like, I just killed one the other day. Like, come on. It wasn't a giant, though. I mean, it was like just a moth in my basement. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I would say that's a no contest. Mothra gets crushed, so. Oh, man. All right. Well, Soji, Hursty, thank you very much for the questions, friends. But yeah.
We have one more question, actually, from Twitch chat.
Oh, we do?
They asked this about an hour ago while you were talking through Maldraxxus. And the question is, the fuck?
The fuck? if it was talking through Maldraxxus,
it was in reference opening to Maldraxxus, where you talked about playing dress up with a mannequin.
I mean, look, if you don't think that's what you're doing with the Maldraxxus campaign, like, we're playing totally different games. You're not playing the right game, because you spent that entire campaign collecting clothes for a mannequin. Like, that was the idea. Like, you got sweet shoulders, you got designer gloves, you got some BAM braces. You had your staff accessory at the end, you know, like your walking cane of sorts. So, yeah, I mean, that was just like playing My Little Pony Barbie dress up sort of deal in that one. So that's funny. Yeah, I mean, look, it was good. It was decent, though. I mean, it was top three in terms of Covenant campaign stories, at least. So, you know. It was there. You know, it was in contention. I mean, let's be honest, it was a distant third, but
it's on the board. That's all that matters.
Exactly. You know what? They participated. You know, that's, I think that's the best thing that can happen here. So,
All right.
I think now we are officially out of questions. So,
and I think that means it is time to wrap up today's show, because if you haven't noticed, I'm super congested and ready to go to bed. Yes. So that is going to be it for today. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want to support it and all the other work that we do over at the Peak of Serenity, including debugging things like Celestial Effervescence, you can do that over at our Patreon at patreon.com/peakofserenity. As always, we really appreciate your support, whether it's financial through Patreon or coming and hanging out in Twitch chat or in Discord, asking questions, answering questions, you know, just coming and being a part of the community. Anyway, thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye.